dear little plant that grows in our isle. For St. Patrick himself sure that set it. And the sun on his labor with pleasure did smile, and with dew from his eye often wet it.
White Church Library opened on St. Patrick's Day, 1911. The library was designed by a man called T.J. Byrne, who's a really interesting man. He went on to become the Dublin City architect. So after all of the troubles in 1922, 1923, the bombing of the forecourt, the destruction of the GPO, all of those things, he was the architect that fixed them all. And after that, his final job was the Hangar 1 at Dublin Airport, and then the main building at Dublin Airport that's very famous for its dance floor. It opened just after he died. His entire career is traceable through Irish architectural history. In fact, I might walk you around just to show you. Don't you love libraries? I love this one. Different to formal galleries, for instance, like national galleries that are very tall and grand, these libraries are sort of low slung and more welcoming and nearly like little mini churches. And do you know what he was doing before he did this? The Stillorgan Sewer. In 1910, when this was first built, this would have been a very, very narrow road. So it would have looked a lot different. Well, it was actually in the countryside. Should we go around and see if we can have a look at the garden? I've never seen the garden. What I will say to you about arts and crafts buildings in Ireland is that they're quite English. White Church Library is very much in the arts and crafts style of building. Now, what that is a truth to materials. The idea in truth to material was to go back to the sort of medieval look of a handmade thing. Here is a great building to describe it, because if you look around this building, it's built like an upturned boat. So you're looking at the ceiling, you can see all the trusses. Normally they'd be covered up. Paned windows, sort of domestic white paned windows, usually 12 panes. The outside is red brick, probably handmade locally. Hand-cut stone, probably hand-cut locally. The fireplaces, the furniture, the chairs, all of the fittings would have been designed by T.J. Byrne. That's the whole idea of the Gesamtkunstwerk, was the term, which is a total work of art. The entire thing designed by the one person. There's two fireplaces here. Look at this. Now, this is a very typical arts and crafts fireplace. Hand-cut stone, hand-cut red brick. Very obviously, nothing fancy. We're not talking, you know, the Victorian overmantels that we all love. We're not talking that. We're talking real stuff here. There was a branch of the Gaelic League in here for a long time as well. So, you know, there's a historic association between this building and the politics of the time. It all came in from William Morris and his associates. Now, William Morris was one of the instigators of the arts and crafts movement. Very much believed in equal rights for everybody. A very anti-industrialist, anti-capitalist. Always very politically engaged and very engaged with the Irish question.
The villages we passed were very poor looking, and the cottages' houses in outside appearance the very poorest habitations I have yet seen. Iceland by no means excepted.
He was in Ireland in 1877 for the first time, and he saw going around the country a lot of the poor, post-famine poverty. He came back again in 1885 and he was in Dublin for a couple of weeks giving lectures on the aim of art. As far as he was concerned, the aim of art was for the betterment of all. He was here for a goodly few days and he did not stop talking from the time he got here till the time he left.
Dublin, on the whole, I rather like. There is a sort of cosy shabbiness about it which, joined to the clear air, is pleasant. I met some very agreeable middle classes there, and had much talk. Far too much, in fact. I doubt if there's an iron pot in Dublin with a leg on it by this time.
He's talking about art and socialism and architecture and socialism, and the goodly people of Dublin are getting up and walking out. And the radical workers who want equal rights are the ones that are sitting there listening.
I do not want art for a few, any more than education for a few, or freedom for a few.
machines did away with work, essentially, for people. They did away with people's self-esteem. And he believed very, very strongly in the right of people to be able to work and earn their living. How I would see the arts and crafts movement working in terms of a building like this, or the kind of training that people were getting in glassmaking or lace, whatever, it's about learning. And it's about learning and skilling. So one has the freedom to earn one's living. And one could perhaps find an equal space in the world.
On whatever other points, the Irishry are wild. They're quite cool, sensible and determined on the home rule question.
Morris did very strongly feel that because people were so focused on home rule was another way of being ruled in a way. It wasn't going to do anything to get equal rights for all. He was right. It turned out to be a very right-wing revolution, didn't it, in the end? A lot of those ideas about, you know, the freedom of the working classes and the freedom of women, come to think of it, were just done away with. And this sort of very conservative atmosphere emerges. Come the signing of the Treaty of Independence after the Civil War and all of that, you really see the end of the arts and crafts movement. It dies a political death. It dies at the hand of right-wing politics. But I think that all movements have their place. The arts and crafts movement has its place. Here we are, 100 years later. We're sitting in Whitechurch Library. It's an arts and crafts building. It's going to be here, I'd say, another 100 years. Everything has its place in the cycle of the human endeavour.
History has remembered the kings and warriors because they destroyed. Art has remembered the people because they created.